Day 21. Gran is sick, but Mom thinks it's just a letdown. I hope so, because she really looks terrible. Oh, I almost forgot. Dad has gotten permission for me to use the university library. And today I went over for the first time. It's really fun. I felt very sophisticated, and a lot of the kids think I'm a co-ed. Isn't that funny? May 22. I met a boy in the library today. His name is Joel Reams, and he's a freshman. We studied together, then he walked me over to Daddy's office. Daddy was busy, so we sat on the front steps of his building and waited for him. I decided to not pretend to Joel, but just to tell the truth about myself and let him take it or leave it. Well, almost all the truth. I told him I was only 16 and just had library privileges because of my dad. He's really a very sweet guy, because he just laughed and said that it was all right because he hadn't planned to ask me to marry him this semester anyway. When Dad came out, he sat on the steps for a while, and the three of us talked like we had known each other always. It was great. Before Joel left, he asked me when I'd be studying again, and I said that I spent my entire waking hours studying, which seemed to please him. May 23. Dear Daddy, I guess I should be mad at him, but I'm not. He went and looked up Joel's record and told me all about him. I really got a kick out of the idea of Dad sneaking around the files getting information for me. Anyway, Joel is an accelerated student who's in the university, though he's only 18 years old, barely. His dad is dead, and his mother works in a factory, and he works a 7-hour shift every day at the school as a janitor. He works from midnight till 7 every morning. Then his first class is at 9 on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. What a schedule! Dad warned me not to interfere with his studies, and I said I wouldn't. However, if he wants to walk me from the library to Dad's office every afternoon, even Saturdays, I can't see what that could hurt. Can you? Evening. Joel did walk me to Dad's office, and it was almost like a date. Our words scrambled out all over each other, and we laughed and chattered both at the same time. It was very chaotic and very lovely. Joel says he's never had much time for girls, and he doesn't understand how I seem to know so much about him. I told him that women were very perceptive, that's all. And crafty. May 25. Joel walked me over to Dad's office again tonight, and it wasn't my idea, but Dad invited him over for dinner tomorrow. Mother said it's fine with her, and I know she's anxious to meet him because Daddy has been teasing me about him. May 26. I raced home from school and helped Mom clean the house like the king of the world was coming, and I made sure we had all the ingredients for orange yeast rolls, my one specialty. I can't wait. I can't wait. Later. Joel just left, and it was a fantastic evening. I don't know why I say that, because he and Daddy spent most of the time together. I guess it's because his dad died when he was 7, but they really had a nice relationship. Even Tim seemed fascinated while they talked, particularly about Joel's educational possibilities. I think Tim is starting to think about college already. My orange rolls were perfection. Even Gran said she couldn't have made better. And Joel ate 7. 7. And he said he'd have taken a pocketful home for breakfast if there had been any left over. Of course, if there had been any left over, I'm sure he wouldn't have mentioned it. He's pretty reserved. I think I'll ask Mom if I can make him a batch and have him pick them up at Dad's office. May 29. Oh, Diary, guess what? Dad had absolutely the most wonderful news to tell us at dinner. And he did it very nonchalantly. He's going to try to get Joel a scholarship. He says he's pretty sure he can do it, but it will take time, and he doesn't want me to say anything until it's all settled. I hope I can keep my big mouth shut. I'm not very good at that kind of thing. P.S. Things seem okay at school. Nobody's talking to me, but nobody's hassling me either. I guess you can't have everything. June 1. Gran's house was sold today, and they've decided just to have the movers pack all her things and put them in storage. She broke down and cried when she heard the news. It's the first time I've really seen her cry. I guess Gramps being gone, and now the house, which she lived in almost all her life, makes everything seem so final. Later. I wonder if Joel really likes me. I wonder if he thinks I'm cute, or pretty, or attractive. I wonder if I seem like the kind of girl who would mean something serious to him. I hope he likes me, because I like him a lot. In fact, I think I really love him. Mrs. Joel Reams. Mrs. Joel Reams. Mr. and Mrs. Joel Reams. Dr. and Mrs. Joel Reams. Doesn't that look lovely? June 2. Mrs. Larson just called and said that Jan had promised to babysit, but she called at the last minute and canceled, which sounds just like Jan. Oh, well, I guess I can study there as well as I can here. Gotta pack my things together. See you later. P.M. Dear Diary, I'm really dragged and tired and sad and worn out and fed up. Jan came by about half an hour after Mrs. Larson left and said she wanted to babysit because she needed the bread. But I couldn't let her because she was stoned and Mrs. Larson's baby is only 4 months old. But she wouldn't leave, so finally I had to call her parents and ask them to come and get her. I told them she was sick, but by the time they got there, she was really grooving. She had the stereo on loud enough to wake the baby, who was wet and crying anyway. But I didn't dare even change her because I wasn't sure what Jan might do. She was so high, her mom and dad had to practically pull her out to the car, and they were both crying and asking you not to tell her parole officer. Oh, I hope I did the right thing. I probably shouldn't have called her parents, but I really couldn't get her out of there, and I surely couldn't have left her with a baby. I can just imagine what it's going to be like in school tomorrow when this gets around. Bam! Nobody's even going to listen to my side. And besides, dopers don't understand things like hurting babies. They don't understand anything. June 3. Mom and Dad said I did exactly as I should have last night, and they were sorry they hadn't been available to help me. But what could they have done besides call Jan's parents? Actually, it might have been even worse if they'd been there. Who knows? Gotta go now. P.M. Jan passed me in the hall today, and there was bitterness and hostility in her face like I have never seen before. "I'll get even with you, you fucking Miss Polly Pure," she said, and she practically screamed it out in front of everyone. I tried to explain, but she turned and walked away as though I didn't even exist. Later I went to the library. Joel knew something was wrong, so finally I told him I'm coming down with a cold and feel miserable. The feeling miserable part is true. He said I should take some aspirin and get some rest. Life is so simple for straight people. Date unknown. I don't know what Jan has told all the kids, but she really must be starting some ugly rumors, because now I get sneers and giggles, which is worse than being lonely and ignored. I wish I could talk to Joel, but I'm not even going to the library to study. I'm so uptight. I'll just take some books home and work in my room. My room will be my whole universe. Date unknown. Joel just called from the library because he was worried about me. He had talked to Dad's secretary, who didn't know anything. I'm so glad he called. But I told him I was sick and wouldn't be going to the library this week. Oh, I am sick. I'm sick of the screwed-up potheads and acid heads and all the other dopey dopers who are persecuting me. Anyway, Joel asked if I'd mind if he called me every night. and I didn't tell him that I'd be waiting by the phone, but I will be. But you knew that, didn't you? June 7. During the night, Gran got quite sick. I think she just doesn't care to go on without Gramps. She didn't come out of her room for breakfast. I took her a tray, but she just played around with the food. Tonight I must go in and visit with her instead of going to the library like I'd finally decided to do. Joel will understand. Bye now. June 8. I'm so boxed in, I don't know what to do. Jan sidled up to me as I was walking down the ramp and whispered, "You better tell your little tail-wagging sister not to accept candy from strangers or even from friends, especially your friends." But Jan wouldn't do that. She couldn't. No matter what she thinks of me, she surely wouldn't take it out on Alexandria, would she? Would she? I wish I could make her understand, but I simply don't know how. Oh, I would like to talk to Mom or Dad or Joel or Tim about this, but everything I do seems to make things worse. I guess I'll just have to work it into a dinner conversation some way about vindictive kids who put acid on candy and gum, etc., and pass them out. Maybe if I tell them that a teacher was talking about a kid in Detroit who died that way, they'll be careful. They've got to be careful. June 9. I was walking home from the store and a carload of kids pulled up beside me and began shouting things like, "Well, if it isn't Easy Lay, Mary Pure. No, it's Miss Finkmouth. Miss Super Finkmouth. Miss Double Triple Finkmouth. I wonder what would happen if we stashed some shit in her old man's car. Wouldn't that be great, having her father, the professor, picked up?" Then they called me every rotten name in the book and roared off, laughing hysterically, leaving me emotionally crushed and battered and beaten. I think they're just threatening me, trying to drive me crazy. But who knows? Last summer I read about some stoned kids who put a cat in a washing machine and turned it on just to see what would happen. Maybe they really would like to know how Dad would react. They're such a bunch of lousy, crazy bastards, I wouldn't put it past them. But I don't think they'll go that far. Maybe if I just sort of ignore them, they'll eventually give up. June 10. For the first time, I feel absolutely certain that even if I were locked in a room full of acid, speed, and every other upper in the world, I would only be disgusted. For I see what it does to kids who used to be my friends. Surely they wouldn't pick on me so unmercifully if it weren't for drugs, would they? Today someone put a burning roach in my locker, and when the principal called me out of my room, even he knew I wouldn't do anything that stupid. My new jacket has a big hole in it, and some loose papers had caught on fire and smoked everything all up. He asked me to name anyone I thought might have done it. And although I suspect Jan, I wouldn't dare tell on her, and I certainly don't want to name all the dopers at school. I'd be a fine one to point fingers. Besides, they'd probably kill me. I'm really afraid. June 11. I'm so grateful school will be out soon, and next year maybe I can go to school in Seattle and live with Aunt Jeannie and Uncle Arthur. I do wish Gran hadn't sold her house. But sick as she is, I guess I couldn't have lived there either. P.S. I went to the library at the university, and Joel and I sat out on the lawn for a while. But things just aren't the same. Every day everything seems to get a little worse. I wish Joel could have been Dad's son, and that I might never have been born. June 12. Tonight is the dance, but naturally I won't go. Even George, who used to take me out, now looks at me with disdain or passes me by without even seeing me. Apparently the rumors are growing. I just can't even imagine what they're saying or how to stop them. Date unknown. I think the old grass gang is trying to drive me completely insane, and they're almost succeeding. Today, Mom and I were in the market, and we met Marcy and her mom. While they stopped to talk, Marcy turned to me and said, with a beautiful smile on her face, "Tonight we're having a party, and this is your last chance." I said, "No, thank you," as calmly as I could, but I thought I was going to choke. Her mother was standing about 2 inches away from her. Then she smiled just as sweetly and said, "You might as well come, because we're going to get you anyway." Can you believe it? A 15-year-old girl from an educated, respected family couldn't be threatening another girl in public, not in the nice, precise vegetable department. I thought I was going to lose my mind, that right then and there my mind was going to fall out on the floor and dissolve. On the way home, Mom commented about my being so quiet. Then she asked me why I didn't get nice Marcy Green to fix me up every now and then. Nice Marcy Green, ha! Maybe I am losing my mind. Maybe these things really aren't happening. June 16. Gran died in her sleep last night. I tried to tell myself that she's gone to Gramps, but I'm so depressed all I can think about is worms eating her body. Empty eye sockets with whole colonies of writhing maggots. I can no longer eat. The whole house is crazy with everyone worrying about the funeral. Poor Mom, 2 parents in 2 months. How can she stand it? I think I'd die if I lost my parents right now. I've been trying to help her and to make things easier, but I'm so exhausted I have to force myself to take every step. June 17. Joel heard about Gran dying and called to tell me how sorry he was. He really gave me a lot of strength and offered to come over tomorrow after the funeral. I'm so glad he's coming. I'm going to need him. June 19. I think the one thing that helped me hold on today was knowing that Joel would be waiting. Every time I wanted to cry, I kept thinking about him, sitting in our living room, and it made things better. I wish Mom had had something to think about, because she was really upset. I've never seen her in such bad shape. Dad tried his best, but I don't think he really reached her. When we got home, Joel and I sat in the backyard and talked for a long time. His father died when he was 7, and since then he's thought a lot about death and about life. His feelings and ideas are so mature, I can hardly believe he isn't 100,000 years old. He's also a very spiritual kind of person. Not really religious, but spiritual. And he feels very deeply. I think most kids in our generation do. Even on drug trips, many kids think they see God or that they are communing with heavenly things. Anyway, when Joel left, he kissed me very tenderly on the lips for the first time. He's so good and fine that I hope someday we can have each other. I really do. The worst thing about today was seeing soft, frail Gran lowered into that dark, endless hole. It seemed to swallow her up, and when they threw dirt on the coffin, I thought I was going to scream. But Joel said not to think about that, because that isn't what death really means. And I guess he's right. I just can't think about it. June 20. There are many social things going on now that school is out, and I try not to be hurt because I can't be included. I guess it's sort of indecent to want to go now that Gran has just died. But to tell you the truth, dear friend diary, I'm tired of being left out and pretending it doesn't hurt. I'm so tired that sometimes I just want to run away again and never come back. June 22. Last night, a bunch of kids were picked up at a party, and today, they're blaming it on me. Jan rubbed up against me in the drugstore and told me that this time I wasn't going to get away with this finking shit. I tried to tell her that I didn't know anything about it, but as usual, she wouldn't listen. I don't know what I'm going to do if they start on me again. I really don't think I can take it, even with Joel and my family behind me. It's just too much. June 23. Everything is wrong, and I can't go on anymore. I really can't. Today, I was just walking down the street by the park when a boy I don't even know grabbed me and threatened me. He kept pulling on my arm and twisting it and calling me every rotten thing in the world. Lots of kids were walking by, and I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Who would help me? The straight kids don't even know I'm alive. Then he pushed me around to the back of the clump of bushes and kissed me. It was totally humiliating and disgusting. He pushed his tongue into my mouth and he just kept rolling it around until I was crying and gagging. Then he said that all I needed was a good fuck and that I'd better not tell anyone or he'd come back and really talk things over with me. I was so frightened I ran to Mr. Blank's law office and asked him to drive me home. He and Mom thought I was sick, and she put me to bed. I am sick. Even now, I can't stop throwing up, and I can't concentrate. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I can't tell Mom. After Gran and Gramps, this would be the last straw. Oh, what am I going to do? A car just drove by with its lights flashing and the horn blaring, and the whole family ran outside to see what was going on. Except me. I don't care anymore. June 24. This morning at breakfast, I told the family that I was really being pushed again by the kids. Dad offered to go and talk to some of the parents, but I begged him not to because it would just make things worse. I even told Dad to lock his car because someone threatened to plant marijuana in it. Of course, I had to warn Tim and Alex again, but nothing helps. I feel like we're under siege, and no one else seems to be taking it very seriously. Dad really thinks the kids are just putting me on, and that they wouldn't do anything to hurt me. I couldn't tell him what happened yesterday, so I guess I'll just have to let him go on thinking that everything is really okay. Later. Sweet Mom drove me to the university this afternoon to see Joel. She said she had to pick some things up at Dad's office, but I know she was just being thoughtful. She's really very nice. After I talked with Joel for a while, I don't know why I did it, but I asked him to walk with me, and with a completely disintegrated heart, I told him the partial truth. I didn't mean to tell him, but now I guess I'm glad I did. His reaction was just like I always knew it would be. He said that he really cared about me, and that he was sure I could handle it because I was basically a good and strong person. Maybe he just said that because he's going home now that the university renovation is over. But he gave me the gold watch his father had given him, and I gave him Gran's ring. It was awful. And now I feel like the grayness in all the gray days in the world. June 25. Today our area was a nut house with everyone running around, preparing for tonight's annual School Is Out bash. None of the grass gang paid the least attention to me, and I'm glad. Maybe they've got another project. It's strange that a big high school like this can be divided into two completely different worlds which seem to know nothing about each other. Or are there many worlds? Is the school actually like a minor galaxy, with a little world for each minority group, and one for the poor kids, and one for the rich kids, and one for the dopers, or maybe even one for the privileged dopers, and one for the dopers who come from not-so-wealthy backgrounds? All of us being completely unaware of the other worlds, until a person tries to step from one sphere to the other. Is that the sin? or is the real problem in trying to get back to the original globe? Surely all kids who have experimented with drugs don't have this problem. Or do they? I guess I shall find out in the future. At least I can try. Chris was lucky. Her folks just moved to a town where no one knew her. P.S. I saw three of the square kids, and they asked me if I were going to the bash and everything. Maybe the ice is breaking. I hope. June 27. I didn't wake up until 11:30, and I feel so wonderful I could burst. The birds are chirping outside my window. It's summer, dear friend, and I'm alive and well and happy in my own dear bed. Hooray for me! I think I'm going to go to summer school and take some extra courses. Then maybe next summer I can take some summer classes on the university campus. Won't that be fun? July 1. Imagine the first day of July. I wish Joel were here to see how lovely everything is. He writes very lonely letters already. His mother sounds sweet, but apparently she isn't very intellectual, and he longs to have someone to talk to like my mother and father, who are very stimulating. He made me promise to enjoy and appreciate them enough for both of us. I stopped taking piano lessons many months ago, and I started again today. My teacher gave me an incredibly difficult concerto, but I guess I'll eventually catch on. I want Joel to be proud of my musical abilities as well as other things. P.S. Tim and I took a long walk yesterday, and we saw Jan at the drugstore and Marcy in the park, and neither one of them paid any attention to me. Yahoo! I guess now that school is over, they've given up on me. They've given up on me, and I can finally be really free. Won't that be the most wonderful of glorious feelings in the entire universe? I'm so happy I could die. July 3. Today is another beautiful, beautiful day, except that Dad got the pictures of Gran's grave and the tombstone which was finally placed there. It's a beautiful tombstone, but I keep wondering how decayed her body is by now. And what about Gramps? His must really be a mess. Someday I'm going to get a book on embalming from the library and see just exactly how these things do happen. I wonder if Mom and Dad and Tim think about these things, or is it only me? Do I have a morbid mind because of my past experiences? I guess I don't, because Joel said he wondered the same thing when his dad died, and he was only 7 years old. July 7. Mrs. Larson broke her leg in an automobile accident, and I'm going over there every day to clean the house and cook for Mr. Larson and take care of the baby until Mrs. Larson's mother can get there. Good practice for the future. Little Luann is a sweet little thing, and I'm going to love it. I gotta go now to start my new job. I hope Mr. Larson doesn't eat at the hospital all the time, because I want to practice cooking. See ya. Date unknown. My dear precious friend, I'm so grateful that they would let Mom bring you to me in your battered, padlocked little case. I was terribly embarrassed when the nurse made me use the combination and dump both of you out and my extra pencils and pens. But I guess they were just being careful and checking to see that you weren't filled with drugs of one sort or another. I don't even feel real. I must be somebody else. I still can't believe that this has actually happened to me. The window is filled with heavy wires. I guess that's better than bars. But I still know that I am in some kind of hospital jail. I have tried to piece the whole thing together, but I can't. The nurses and doctors keep telling me I will feel better. But I still can't get straight. I can't close my eyes because the worms are still crawling on me. They're eating me. They're crawling through my nose and gnawing in my mouth, and oh, God. I must get you back in your case because the maggots are crawling off my bleeding, writhing hands into your pages. I'll lock you in. You'll be safe. Date unknown. I am feeling better today. They took the bandages off my hands and changed them. And it is no wonder they hurt so much. The whole ends of my fingers have been torn off, and two nails have been pulled out completely, and the others are torn down almost in half. It hurts to write. But I shall lose my mind if I do not. I wish I could write to Joel, but what could I ever tell him, and besides, no one could ever read this scrawling, since both hands are bandaged, like boxing gloves. I am still crawling with worms, but I am beginning to be able to live with them. Or am I actually dead? And they are just experimenting with my soul. Date unknown. The worms are eating away my female parts first. They have almost entirely eaten away my vagina and my breasts, and now they are working on my mouth and throat. I wish the doctors and nurses would let my soul die. But they are still experimenting with trying to reunite the body and the spirit. Date unknown. Today I woke up feeling rational and sound. I guess the bummer is over. The nurse says I've been here 10 days. And when I read back what I've written, I really must have been out of it. Date unknown. Today my hands were placed under a kind of sun lamp to promote the healing. They haven't given me a mirror yet, but I can feel that my face is all clawed up, too, and my knees and feet and elbows. In fact, most of my body is wrenched and battered and bruised. I wonder if my hands will ever look like hands again. The ends of my fingers look like hamburger cooking under the sun lamp. And they've given me a spray to use to ease the pain. They're no longer bandaged, but I almost wish they were because I have to keep looking closely to be sure they aren't getting wormy. Date unknown. A fly got into my room today and I couldn't stop screaming. I was so afraid he was going to lay more maggot eggs on my face and hands and body. It took two nurses to kill him. I can't let flies get on me. Maybe I'll have to stop sleeping. Date unknown. I just got out of bed and walked to the mirror. I have splints on four toes, so I guess they're broken too, but anyway, I hardly recognized myself. My face is puffed and swollen and black and blue and scratched. And my hair has been pulled out in big patches till I have completely bald areas. Maybe it isn't really me. Date unknown. I refractured two toes getting up, so now both feet are in casts. Mom and Dad come by to see me every day, but they don't stay long. There isn't much to say till I get my mind working again. Date unknown. I'm really dizzy, but the nurse says that's just from my brain concussion. The worms have almost gone away. I guess the spray kills them. Date unknown. I found out how I got the acid. Dad says that someone put it on the chocolate-covered peanuts. And I guess that's right, because I remember eating the peanuts after I'd washed the baby. At the time, I thought Mr. Larson had left me a surprise. But now that I think about it, I don't remember why I thought Mr. Larson had been there and gone without saying anything. That part is a blank. Actually, I'm amazed that I remember anything. But I guess no matter what kind of damage I pile on myself, my mind keeps working. The doctor says that's normal because it really takes a lot to knock your brains loose permanently. I hope that's right because I feel like I've taken a lot already. Anyway, I remember that the candy reminded me of Gramps because he was always eating chocolate peanut clusters. And I remember starting to get dizzy and sick to my stomach. I guess I tried to call Mom to ask her to come over and get me and the baby when I realized that somebody somehow had tripped me. It's all very unclear because when I try to think back, it's like I'm looking through fuzzy colored lights. But I do remember trying to dial home and taking eternities to get each number to the end. I think the line was busy, and I don't really remember what happened next except that I was screaming. And Gramps was there to help me. But his body was dripping with blazing, multicolored worms and maggots which fell on the floor behind him. He tried to pick me up, but only the skeleton remained of his hands and arms. The rest had been picked clean by wriggling, writhing, slithering, busily eating worms which seethed on his every part. They were eating and they wouldn't stop. His two eye sockets were teeming with white, soft-bodied, creeping animals which were burrowing in and out of his flesh and which were phosphorescent and swirled into one another. The worms and parasites started creeping and crawling and running toward the baby's room, and I tried to stomp on them and beat them to death with my hands, but they multiplied faster than I could kill them. And they began crawling on my own hands and arms and face and body. They were in my nose and my mouth and my throat, choking me, strangling me. Tapeworms, larvae, grubs disintegrating my flesh, crawling on me, consuming me. Gramps was calling me, but I couldn't leave the baby. Nor did I want to go with him, for he frightened me and nauseated me. He was so badly eaten I could barely recognize him. He kept pointing to a casket next to his, and I tried to get away, but thousands of other dead things and people were pushing me inside and forcing the lid down on me. I was screaming and screaming and trying to claw my way out of the casket, but they wouldn't let me go. From the shape I'm in now, I guess when I tried to get the worms off me, hunks of flesh and hair came out in my own hands. How I cracked my head, I don't know. Maybe I was trying to beat the bummer out of my skull. I really don't remember. It seems like such a long, long time ago. And writing this down has made me incredibly tired. I've never been so tired in my life. Date unknown. Mother and Dad believe that somebody tripped me. They do. They do. They believe me. I have a good idea who it was, but I guess there'll never be any way of finding out. I must just try to rest and get well, as they suggested. I will not think about what happened. Thank God I didn't hurt the baby. Thank you, God. Date unknown. In a few days, I'm going to be transferred to another hospital. I was hoping I could go home, because my hands are healing, and most of the bruises have started to fade. The doctor said it will be a year before my hands are completely better, with the two nails really grown out. But in just a few more weeks, they should be fit to look at. My face is almost back to normal, and little fuzzy hair is beginning to grow on my bald patches. Mama brought some scissors, and she and the nurse cut my hair really short, short, short. It's almost like a shag cut, and isn't quite professional. But Mama says I can go to the beauty shop and have it trimmed in a week or two, or whenever I'm released from the other hospital. Besides, I wouldn't want anyone to see me looking as dingy as I do now. I still have nightmares about the worms, but I'm trying to control myself, and I never mention them anymore. What good would it do? I know they aren't real, and everybody else knows they aren't real. Still, at times, they seem so very real that I can even feel the warmth and slimy, fat softness of their bodies. And every time my nose or one of my many scabs itches, I have to fight myself to keep from screaming for help. Date unknown. Mother brought me a packet of letters from Joel. She had written and told him that I was in the hospital, very ill. And he has written every day since. He even called one night on the phone. And not wanting to get too involved, she told him that I had had kind of a nervous breakdown. Well, that's one way to put it. July 22. I could tell Mom had been crying when she came to see me today. So I tried to be very strong and put on a really happy face. It's a good thing I did, because they're sending me to an insane asylum. A loony bin. A crazy house. Freak wharf. Where I can wander around with the other idiots and lunatics. I'm so scared I cannot even take a full breath. Daddy tried to explain it all very professionally, but it was obvious that he had been completely unhinged by the whole thing. But not as much as I am. No one could be. He said that when my case was taken before the juvenile judge, Jan and Marcy both testified that I had been trying for weeks to sell them LSD and marijuana, and that around school I was a known user and pusher. Circumstances really were quite against me. I have a drug record, and Daddy said that when Mrs. Larson's neighbor heard me screaming, she and the gardener came over to see what was happening, and thinking I had gone insane, they locked me in a small closet, ran to check the baby, who had apparently also been awakened by my screams, and called the police. By the time they got there, I had injured myself severely and was trying to scratch the rough plaster off the walls to get out, and had beaten my head against the door until I had a brain concussion and a fractured skull. Now they are going to send me to the booby hatch, which is probably where I belong. Daddy says I probably won't be there long, and he will immediately start proceedings to have me released and put into the hands of a good psychiatrist. Dad and Mom keep calling the place where I'm going a youth center, but they aren't fooling anybody. They aren't even fooling themselves. They're sending me to an insane asylum. And I don't understand, how can that be? How is it possible? Other people have bad trips and they don't get sent to an insane asylum. They tell me my worms aren't real, and yet they're sending me to a place that's worse than all the coffins and the worms put together. I don't understand why this is happening to me. I think I've fallen off the face of the earth and that I will never stop falling. Oh, please, please don't let them take me. Don't let them put me away with insane people. I'm afraid of them. Please let me go home to my own room and go to sleep. Please, God. July 23. My parole officer came and got me and took me to the state mental hospital, where I was registered and cataloged and questioned and everything but fingerprinted. Then I was taken to the psychiatrist's office, and he talked to me for a little while. But I didn't have anything to say because I couldn't even think. All that kept running through my brain was, I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. Then they took me down a smelly, ugly, dingy, paint-peeling old hallway and through a locked door, which was locked again behind me. My heart was pounding so hard that I thought at any second it would explode and spray the whole hall. I could hear it pounding in my ears, and I could hardly get one foot in front of the other. We walked down an endlessly dark hallway, and I got a look at some of the people here, and now I know I don't belong here. I can't get over what it feels like to be in a world of crazy people, a whole world of them. On the inside and on the outside. I don't belong here, but I'm here. That's crazy, isn't it? So you see, dear friend, my only friend, there's nowhere to go. because the whole world is crazy. July 24. The night was interminable. Anything in the world could happen in here, and no one would ever know. July 25. This morning they woke me up at 6:30 for a breakfast I couldn't eat, and bleary-eyed and still shivering, I was led down the long, dark hall to the big metal door with a barred window in the middle. Keys were clanked into the big lock, and we were on the other side. Then the keys were clanked again. The day attendants talked a lot, but I really couldn't hear them. My ears are clogged up, probably from fear. Then they took me to the youth center, which was just two buildings away, past two slobbering men with another attendant who were raking up leaves. At the youth center there were 50, 60, maybe even 70 kids, milling around, preparing to go to their classes or whatever they were going to do. All of them seemed pretty normal, except one big girl who looked to be about my age, but who was 8 or 10 inches taller and at least 50 pounds heavier. She was stretched out stupidly under the pinball machine in the day room, and there was also a teenage boy who kept bouncing his head and muttering idiotically. A bell rang, and all of the kids went off except the two dummies. I was left in the day room with them. Finally, a large lady, the school nurse, came in and said that if I wanted the privilege of going to school, I would have to go see Dr. Miller and sign a commitment that I was ready to live according to all the center rules and regulations. I said I was ready, but Dr. Miller wasn't in, so I spent the rest of the morning in the day room, watching the two dum-dums, one sleeping and one bouncing. I wondered what insane impression I made upon them, with my healing face and my lawnmower-type haircut. All through the endless morning, bells rang and people came and went. There was a stack of magazines on a little round table in the hall, but I couldn't read them. My mind was racing 1,000 miles a minute and going nowhere. At 11:30, Marge, the nurse, showed me the dining room. Kids were milling around in all directions, and certainly none of them looked crazy enough to be locked up, but obviously they all were. The meal consisted of macaroni and cheese with a little bologna cut up in it, and canned string beans, and some kind of soggy-looking pudding. Trying to eat was a big waste of time. I couldn't get anything down past the lump in my throat. A lot of the kids were laughing and teasing each other, and it was pretty obvious that they even call their teachers and therapists and social workers by their first names. I guess everyone but the doctors. None of them seem as frightened as am I. Were they frightened when they first came here? Are they still frightened, but putting up a good front? I don't understand how can they exist here. Truthfully, the youth center isn't as bad as the ward. It seems almost like a small school. But the hospital itself is unbearable. The smelly halls, the bleak people, the locked, barred doors, it's a dreadful nightmare. It's a bad trip. It's a bummer. It's everything terrible that I can imagine. Dr. Miller finally came back in the afternoon, and I got to talk to him. He told me that the hospital couldn't help me, and the staff couldn't help me, and the teachers couldn't help me, and the program, which had proved very successful, couldn't help me, unless I wanted help. He also told me that before I could overcome my problem, I had to admit I had a problem. But how do I do that, when I really haven't? I know now that I could resist drugs if I were drowning in them. But how will I ever convince anyone other than Mom and Dad and Tim, and Joel, I hope, that I didn't really take anything knowingly this last time? It sounds incredible that the first time I took drugs and the last time, which landed me in an insane asylum, were both given to me without my knowledge. Oh, nobody would believe anyone could be that dumb. I can hardly believe it myself, even when I know it's true. Anyway, how can I admit anything when I'm so scared I can't even talk? I just sat nodding my head in Dr. Miller's office so I wouldn't have to open my mouth. Nothing would have come out anyway. At 2:30, the kids were out of school, and some of them went to play ball, and part of them stayed here for group therapy. Some of what the first doctor and the parole officer told me is coming back. The kids are in two groups. Group one kids are trying to obey all the rules and get released. They get all the privileges offered. Group two is kind of grounded. They aren't obeying the rules and are losing their tempers or cursing or stealing or having sex or something, and so they are restricted in everything. I hope there's no pot here. I know I could resist it, but I don't think I could stand any more problems without really going crazy. I guess the doctors know what they're doing, but I'm so lonely and so lost and so frightened. I think I really am losing my mind. At 4:30, it was time for us to come back to our wards and be locked in again like animals in the zoo.